Hi, everyone.
Hey.
I'm Amelia. She's about dark hair and answers to the call of the wild. Just kidding.
What?
I forgot her name, but you know, if you see you, just if you see, let me know and tell me my name.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus of The Fall Guy, The Nice Guys, and finally our favorite guy, Ryan Gosling. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
So today is a two-part episode where we will be discussing Gosling and Emily Blunt's new romantic action screwball parody comedy, The Fall Guy. And then the majority of this episode will be dedicated to deep diving one of the great physical, slapsticky, dark comedies of the last decade in Shane Black's The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
Which I've personally vacillated on over this past decade of just liking that movie to then not loving it to now loving it again. And I think after prepping this episode, I really think this is one of my favorite comedies of the past decade. So I'm really excited to talk about it with you today.
Yeah, I think I loved it when we first saw it. I like have a very clear memory. I think I loved it like a lot more than you the first time we saw it.
Yes.
And then I had a similar experience where I was like, well, you know, do the jokes like hit as much the second time? Mm-hmm. I still think they do. But then to prepping the pod today, especially like I was able to see a more even like emotional side as well as the humor there that I didn't really pick up before because I was just watching it as like this completely unserious comedy Ryan Gosling movie. And yeah, I'm really, really excited to talk about The Nice Guys today.
Yeah. I mean, rewatching it again, I think I just, you know, I think I might have had the quote unquote nihilism of this movie cloud my mind. You know, I thought The Nice Guys was just this like comedy that's supposed to hollow you out by the end and just be like, what's it all for anyways? Why help people? But I do think you're right. There is more of an emotional through line here that is pretty compelling. And also just taking notes on rewatch or prep for this deep dive today, I found myself laughing through all of my note taking.
Yeah.
And that is not normal because as our Patreon listeners know, you all voted for The Nice Guys for us to cover on the show because we've been covering so many important self-serious movies. You know, we've covered Children of Men and Garland's films and Sicario lately. But I'm happy that we picked The Nice Guys and we're doing this movie because I'd love to reflect not only on how great of a comedy this is or a noir this is, but also reflect on Ryan Gosling's career today, which is why we're also covering The Fall Guy with a non-spoiler reaction.
Yeah.
So what did you think about The Fall Guy? We just saw it a few nights ago. Packed theater, a really loud crowd.
Yeah.
Some more than others, right? There are people laughing at certain jokes, not laughing at others. I think we were kind of like 60% in, 40% out.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really fun time, mostly.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a fun time at the movies. I was definitely aware of like what you said. There were some, you know, humor beats that just didn't work for me, but I was still like, I'm happy that like the people who are laughing at this like find this funny, and then like kind of also reversed in some situations where I was laughing at things that other people weren't. But so like not all of the humor stuck, and it was also, I think I probably should have like gone in with more balanced expectations, but
yes,
it was a little bit less.
I agree, me too.
Or like a little bit more hollow than I thought it would be. But again, that's okay because it knows what it is.
Right.
So it was a fun time, ultimately.
Yeah, it's a fun throwback to a kind of like Hollywood entertainment that has this rom-com screwball energy that we just don't see as often anymore.
Yeah.
And it's also a movie marketed and semi-delivering this love letter to the unforgiving and overlooked stunt work behind the scenes of these kind of massive Hollywood action spectacles that usually just exploit stunt workers and we never hear from them or see them. And I think that version of The Fall Guy as this fun throwback rom-com action spectacle that has this meta stunt work commentary that becomes literalized is really effective. And it's also just kind of a goofy, silly, sometimes cute movie, like a good time where you have Ryan Gosling singing Taylor Swift in a car, you know, and that's in the trailer. Yeah. So that's like not a massive spoiler. However, like what you're saying with the hollowness, like much of David Leitch's work, the director of this film, you know, in his past work with things like Deadpool 2 or recently with Bullet Train, The Fall Guy, just like those movies, is a little bit weirdly ambitious in places I'm surprised by. And it's trying to find like a humor in this meta structure. And it wants to both be a rom-com action film with this larger homage to artists or people behind the scenes in Hollywood, from stunt coordinators to publicists, while also trying to have another commentary of trying to explore this larger corruption backstory that adds like 20 minutes onto the film.
Yeah.
And makes it feel pretty bloated. And it tries to also, at times, really hilariously, and other times kind of not totally works, like this parody of Hollywood classism and greed. And it never gets to that scathing satire level, and it just stays in parody mode, which is fine. But it never totally focuses on criticizing the industry. And there are just like a lot of kind of half realized jokes on studio actors and directors, you know, like a David Fincher, like a Quentin Tarantino filmmakers have done in the past in other movies. But it never gets to the level of, like, it's not like Fincher's The Killer last year, which was really smart about its meta commentaries. Mm-hmm. Right. And instead, this movie has, I think, there's some Guy Ritchie elements, you know, where the satire or parody of it all risks becoming underdeveloped beats. And I think what you're saying about it being hollow, it can just feel a little bit contrarian, you know, when they're poking fun at the Christopher Nolans or poking fun at the Denis Villeneuve's with Dune music in certain moments. It also then tries to make fun of Tom Cruise and Matthew McConaughey, and just,
right,
it's poking instead of critiquing, you know, and it's that, which is, again, fine, but it does feel like I want that rom-com energy between Gosling and Blunt back. I feel like it loses its...
Yeah.
It's the thing that works in the movie. It only touches on that for like 30 or 40% of the film.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that we're doing the nice guys because while Emily Blunt's not like a partner, it's not like a buddy cop movie with her, there's parts of the movie, without spoiling anything, that it's necessary that her character's in the dark for Ryan Gosling to do what he's doing. But the moments that the movie like really succeeds is when they are talking to each other or on screen with each other. And you just wish you got more of that. And that's what's so successful about something like The Nice Guys, is you feel like Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling like have their own characters, and then they're going on these individual journeys, but their journeys intersect, obviously, right? And are intertwined.
Yeah.
And you don't feel, well, obviously that is true for The Fall Guy. And also it's a different movie where Emily Blunt isn't like necessarily completely a part of what Ryan Gosling is doing throughout the whole movie. It feels like it's lacking that. You like want Emily Blunt, because of the way it was marketed, probably.
Yeah.
You just expected more of Emily Blunt's character. And she's such a comedic powerhouse that it really like, I guess I was disappointed a little bit by not seeing that.
She grounds how animated Gosling can get in this movie in a real fun way. And so when they're playing off of each other, and Gosling knows what he's doing, he's being very hyperbolic, more than usual. You know, if you like what he's doing that's animated in The Nice Guys, he's certainly doing that in The Fall Guy. And it feels more closer to the Barbie performance than it does anything else he's done in his career. But yeah, I mean, when this movie is playing into that rom-com, even like buddy cop moments, I'm like, oh, are they going to go on this mystery together? And they just don't.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a spoiler, but they don't. And like Emily Blunt is on the phone for a lot of this film. Yeah. You're like, how are you doing this to Emily Blunt? Like one of the great actors right now. That's crazy. And it sucks because that's where the movie is most comfortable, when those two are on screen together. And I think when you're watching it, you're like, oh, this movie feels like it's operating at a high level when it's trying to celebrate old fashioned star power and stunt work. And it's pretty good when it does that. And when it's being meta and it's paying homage to those aspects of Hollywood history, it's a fun time to be laughing at different references throughout the film. Like there's Michael Mann references in this movie. There's there's different, I think there's a, who else is shouted out in this film? They do like different voices, like some of the actors, like Winston Duke.
I mean, well, there's definitely, like you already said, the Matthew McConaughey, and like a very clear, like, there's Dune music that is like laid over the movie that they're shooting. It's like Metal Storm or something.
Yes,
like that.
That's right. Yeah.
All
of that works. It's a fun time to be laughing with the filmmakers, right? And it feels like a movie that's paying homage to adventure films like Romancing the Stone, or movies that are even more thrilling like Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock in Speed, or even something like The Mummy. In fact, I think the Fall Guy feels like a meta version of The Mummy, where you're following Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz from The Mummy on their set as they are the actors, rather than in their supernatural movie as the characters. Mm-hmm. And so it's playing with this like just this adventure genre and twisting that into something that is more self-aware. And I thought that was really cool. It also reminded me a lot of Scream 3.
Yes.
Terms of the David Arquette, dewy, dumb golden retriever energy, where Emily Blunt is doing a kind of Gale Weathers thing. And Scream 3 is probably the most absurd Scream movie, but it's one of my favorites because it's so funny.
Yeah, where like Hannah Waddingham feels like a kind of Parker Posey energy.
Yeah,
in this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like the funny parts for me about this movie were less, there's like kind of physical comedy things that Emily Blunt's character has to do and more kind of movie references that you were talking about, like Winston Duke's character, mm-hmm. like at one point throws someone and like says an actor's name, right? Like,
yeah,
those kind of,
which we can say, jokes. It's not really a spoiler. Doesn't he say The Rock?
He says Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah. And
just
it's
like
funny.
Throws someone. Yeah,
yeah.
So like those, I think the movie references, like talking about Tom Cruise or something like that, like those are the funny moments for me.
Yeah, but then it's also like trying so hard to be self-aware and referential, yeah. And that's the challenging bit, because you would just have taken the fictional world of this movie without any kind of meta commentary and been like, oh, I would just watch Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt solve a mystery together.
Yeah.
And $100 million budget, and I would totally see that. I would see it with a $1 million budget, you know what I mean? Like, so it's crazy that they got too ambitious. And I think the movie really, really relies on Ryan Gosling, which is why we wanted to talk about him today, and his ability to kind of let the audience in on his process of being self-aware, pathetic, and also equally charismatic, and how weird of a blend that is. And then he always has this kind of like, and they really double down on this, if not triple down, this sad boy humility that is just funny in all of his comedic performances that he does again here in the first 25 minutes of the movie. That is really funny. It feels very Thor. So I don't want to step on that, but audiences are going to see a different side of Gosling. That's interesting.
Yeah, I was worried when we got to that part of the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what is this movie? But then it was fine. Yeah.
Well, that's why I was, you know, that's why I'm saying it's more parody than satire, and it becomes less winking. It's like winking with the audience, but it's not as angry as it could be. And I think that that's interesting, because it could have tried to poke a little bit harder in places where it takes a back seat, right? And it kind of tiptoes into that Matthew Vaughn parody of itself almost by accident, because it doesn't fully find a balance of tone. And then it kind of tiptoes into a Taika Waititi, like I said, like a Thor Love and Thunder joke on its own existence. So that's all weird. So if you enjoy The Fall Guy as like this less emotionally successful like Taika project, I think, I mean, people already think Taika's movies are hollow, but this movie is kind of, it does feel hollow. I think you can still enjoy this movie, because there is enough references for you to laugh with an audience. There is enough dramatic needle drops. Even if you don't love the music that's dropped, it still works because the actors are so good. And there's enough with the side actors that feels like you're in a Bond villain SNL skit, which is fun. Like Aaron Taylor Johnson, what he's up to in this movie.
Yeah, I was
just
going to say, before we go on to our Gosling conversation, we have to talk about Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I mean, Winston Duke, great. Stephanie Sue, great. But Aaron Taylor Johnson, like, literally kind of steals the movie from Gosling at one point.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised. I was really surprised.
I was shocked also. I think part of that is, like, you know, obviously, like, most people who have known that, like, The Fall Guy is coming out, it's been on their radar, you are expecting an unserious, like, film, right? Like, an action film.
Right.
But because we've got so many, like, I think self-aware, but in an interesting way, movies.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to see this movie, it does feel like something that was made in the early 2000s. And so again, like, it's still a really fun time watching the movie, but I think people may have, at least people who are like kind of paying attention to the Gosling project and like we're looking forward to this coming out, maybe we're expecting more based off the movies we've gotten previously, like a Barbie, right?
Yeah.
Like a joke on Ken and like talking about concepts, you know, instead of just an action movie. But I do think that Aaron Taylor Johnson, like, I knew he was great from Bullet Train, right?
In terms of comedic roles, like, because he really killed it in that movie. What was he, Tangerine?
Mm-hmm.
And then Brian David
Lemon,
Tyree Henry.
Yeah, I forget who was who, but
yeah.
But they were both like some sort of fruit. I think it was Lemon and Tangerine.
Yeah.
But But Aaron Taylor Johnson, like, there's one point where
Brian Tyree Henry, I've said his name wrong, I apologize. Brian Tyree Henry's character is Lemon and Aaron Taylor Johnson's character is Tangerine.
It's hard because they both have like the three name.
I know
thing.
They do. Yeah.
But I think like there's a moment where Ryan Gosling and Aaron Taylor Johnson are in a scene together, and you like you said, you feel like Aaron Taylor Johnson kind of steals that scene, and what he's doing is doing something similar to a Gosling that we're used to seeing, like this kind of self-aware comedy, but because maybe I wasn't expecting as much out of him, like his he is just like shines, like it is his comedy feels like
he owns it.
Yeah, like I don't know how to totally explain, like his timing is great. He's doing something where he's playing kind of like an outrageous character, but it feels like grounded in the world that we're in.
He
just does a really good job. He crushes it.
He feels like he knows what movie he's in more than the filmmakers at times. You know what I mean? Like that performance is actually a great blend of what the movie's trying to do with parody and realism, because it feels like a hyper real version of a very cartoonish character. And I loved that. You know, he's going to be starring in a comic book movie pretty soon, the Kraven film. So I felt like he was bringing some kind of comic book like energy to this film that it desperately needed, because we were missing so much Emily Blunt. And again, I think that's the big loss from this film, unfortunately, is not enough Blunt.
Yeah, agreed.
Again, which is crazy because they probably paid her millions of dollars to be in this movie. It's like, why not utilize her? How do you underutilize a star like that?
Yeah,
that's honestly like a challenge in itself. Anyway, so extra credit. I want to shout out this movie for doing an in-movie explicit shout out to the Academy Awards needing to add a category for stunts and more people behind the scenes. I thought that was pretty cool. Again, this movie is very meta, so it feels like it's talking to the audience a lot, and it's meta sometimes in unfun ways, but I think this was actually like a helpful way where, you know, this is a conversation that people are having a lot. And this conversation being in the movie dialogue right now in the contemporary world is actually very helpful to get mass audiences to be like, actually, it would be a better idea for us to expand the scope of what kind of awards we're giving out at these massive, you know, if awards shows matter to a certain degree, they should matter in terms of at least praising the people behind the scenes who we never see anyways, who aren't making the millions of dollars of the stars you're looking at every day.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. What about you?
My extra credit, we already talked about, just a moment ago, but it is Aaron Taylor Johnson, just kind of like snuck up, stole the moment. Especially there's like a Matthew McConaughey moment that you unfortunately left to go to the bathroom during like the full speech. And it was really great. the way he was able to really like capture. I mean, I've heard a lot of like celebrities do a Matthew McConaughey bit, but this was like really special. And also just a extra credit to a joke, like when you see the fall guy, there's a very funny sticky note like memento joke, but there's one of the sticky notes comes back towards the end of the movie, which was really great.
I just can't believe a movie like this is going to poke fun at Christopher Nolan and Denis and Matthew McConaughey and Tom Cruise, but like not actually go for it.
Yeah.
Like you might as well. Like what are we doing here? So I'm excited to see what David Leitch has next, just because I did like moments of Bullet Train and I did like moments of The Fall Guy. And I know he's made like Atomic Blonde and he worked the first John Wick film. So I know he can do something that it can be a fully executed package of action, comedy, thrilling, entertainment. But this just wasn't totally it for me.
Yeah.
Some are saying it is. And I hope that the movie does well. I mean, it costs like $150 million. It didn't have a great opening weekend from what I can see here. It's going against the Star Wars re-release. And I saw Phantom Menace last night and it was packed, which was really surprising. And so I think that's taking a lot of money from the film. Also, Luca Guadagnino's Challengers had a huge second weekend.
Yeah.
And it already made its budget back, which is phenomenal, because we were worried about that kind of movie, which is kind of an adult film that might make $100 million or get close to that number in the next few weeks, which would be really exciting. So go see The Fall Guy. All right, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
So before we get into the nice guys, let's talk Gosling. I want to talk about his career and just why we love this actor. Because we have spent a lot of time talking about our favorite actors in the podcast, Christian Bale, Robert Pattinson, and, you know, the younger actors like a Chalamet or Daniel Kaluuya or Jake Gyllenhaal. We've not talked too much about Gosling.
No, yeah. I mean, we we did a little bit on Blade Runner, but not really like a full career, not like why he's special, why he's like so beloved. And before we get into it, we are going to, well, I want to at least, like, do you want to rank his, some of his performances?
I'd love to do that during the Nice Guys deep dive. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try to find a lull, because even though I love the Nice Guys, the pace isn't 100% successful. You know, there is like a lull in the movie somewhere. I think I found it, and we're going to talk about it there.
Okay.
So Ryan Gosling is a Canadian actor turned Canadian-American actor, a Disney child entertainer at the beginning of his career with the Mickey Mouse Club. Have you seen the photos and videos of him in the Mouse Club?
Yeah.
He has these great videos of him at 12 to 14 years old dancing alongside
Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. And even though that probably sounds like a really chill and fun childhood, he's talked publicly about having a pretty isolated and lonely childhood. And he grew up in a Mormon household with his sister, raised in his teenage years by his mother. And he gave an interesting interview where he talked about Yeah, he said he talked, there was an interview where he talked about a lot about his roles that he chose being based on like how his mother raised him as a teenager, which I thought was interesting because he's taken so many roles that are deeply masculine.
Yeah.
But it did also give me a language to understand his career trajectory more as an artist and him trying to deconstruct masculinity. And I think looking at his youth more like that from that perspective makes a lot of sense.
That's something he's kind of like celebrated for, you know?
Yeah.
But shout out moms.
Ways maybe that people don't realize what he's doing with his movies. Like Drive isn't as much him being like, being a man is hard.
Yeah.
It's like him. Now we know after Barbie, it's saying being a man and being sad about it is kind of funny. Mm-hmm. he pivots as a kid doing theater and ballet and dance to Hollywood. He starts to fall in love with the Marlon Brandos of the world, like method style actors, starts to shape his literal accent off of something more New York or Brooklyn, something that can get accepted in Hollywood because he had a difficult childhood. He was insecure about his accent as a Canadian and wanted to fit into America. Maybe that says more about the industry than it says about him.
Yeah.
Or not maybe, but I think it certainly does. And so he basically felt like an outcast growing up. So he made a huge life change, dropped out of high school, and went into Hollywood into his mid to late teenage years without any serious connections to the industry. Like his parents didn't have any connections to film or television. So he starts taking small TV roles and things like the Goosebumps or horror TV shows of the 90s. And then he leads TV shows like Young Hercules, to then becoming a character actor and then doing some method acting stuff, and then starts taking on some really obscure indie roles of playing characters that are neo-Nazis to serial killers to lawyers, kind of a very bizarre 90s masculine archetypical way of getting into Hollywood, which is this like Edward Norton, Matt Damon route.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he seemed like, he was behind those kind of guys, you know? More in that maybe Chris O'Donnell stage of the 90s. So he did this all through like a pretty subpar, like early career where he was doing great with his performances, but the movies he was playing in were really B films. And then he takes on a huge Disney movie, right? He plays a fifth or sixth billed character in a movie like Remember the Titans, and becomes somehow, I think, the second or third most memorable face of Remember the Titans outside of obviously Denzel Washington. And then he blows up in The Notebook from, you know, that great performance with Rachel McAdams, that great duo. It's not actually a performance as I come back to, but I do remember their chemistry being really compelling. You just recently revisited The Notebook.
Yeah. You know,
for this episode,
I don't want to like disappoint people, but I guess The Notebook is like one of my most watched movies probably ever, like in my lifetime.
Wow. I've only seen it once.
I watched it a lot growing up. Like it was on reruns too. And I would watch it like while I was doing my homework, like just reruns. Like it was, and I obviously like loved it.
Yeah.
I left a review, you know, that like as it's been talked about, like this movie did a number on like little like me to think that like Ryan Gosling hanging off of a Ferris wheel, like threatening death for a date was really cute, you know? But that's just like the nature of a 2000s movie rom-com.
Right.
But I was like a little disappointed rewatching it. It's like why you shouldn't revisit some things.
Some of those movies you have a very nostalgic memory.
Yeah. But I did really love like Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams, you know, like they will always have a special place in my heart. But I don't know, but I wasn't as like, I guess also I wasn't as impressed with Gosling's performance, and it was really interesting to see like kind of what our culture had him as this like heartthrob, masculine, rugged man from The Notebook,
right.
I guess, like during that moment. And now what he's become, which is like a joke on that kind of character of this like sad brooding man. He's like a very, he's like in on the joke, and also people know that he's in on the joke.
Yes.
And he's kind of evolved that whole archetype.
Right. He's almost like co-opted the audience's perception of him. And he's taken that and shifted it in a lot of different ways. So he goes from The Notebook of Rachel McAdams and goes straight back to then using his Hollywood capital to going into the indie darling space again with a movie called Half Nelson, which was his first Oscar nomination before La La Land and Barbie. And in Half Nelson, he plays this troubled history teacher, which for obvious reasons, I have not seen yet. I'm sure
I haven't checked it out either.
I'm sure I will one day when I'm done teaching. Watching sad teacher movies is just depressing as a teacher.
Not because
I'm sure he's great in it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Not in the way of it's like, oh, we can't, we don't want to watch something that feels too close to an experience. It's more so because, as we've talked about many times on the pod, most teacher stories, especially in like popular mediums or in movies, are just like totally inaccurate or like really borderline. Problematic, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
that's the right word to use.
So I just usually stay away from them because they're so annoying.
This doesn't seem to be the case with this one. From what I understand about the movie and the reviews that I read about it, I am really curious to see this film. I'm going to wait a little bit. Maybe when we do a Ryan Gosling movie draft episode one day, I'll go ahead and watch it. That's one of the few Gosling performances I haven't seen, but I will watch again one day. And so during these years, he starts some romances offset with Sandra Bullock and Rachel McAdams and eventually Eva Mendes. They get married, have children. We'll get to that. And he starts to get actual criticism, which is great. If you're getting actual criticism as an actor or an actress, that means you've made it, right? He's become a bigger household name. And he wasn't exactly like Leonardo DiCaprio or Christian Bale at the time, or even how famous as Chalamet is right now, but he was still a pretty big deal. And then around 2006, he takes a 3 to 4 year hiatus because he said he needed to reflect on some career choices. And that Gosling hiatus, that's what I'm going to call it, is basically this thoughtful acting shift, trying to get into a new lane of his career. And that's a norm of his work. He's done this a few times. So he comes back in 2010 with Blue Valentine, which is a movie that at 15 years old made me feel bad for literally everyone who was married. And I feel bad for Michelle Williams, who has starred in two of the saddest movies of the 21st century in Blue Valentine and Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
What a career. And then he does Remember the Titans. The Remember the Titans thing again, which is take a maybe some less screen time, but for a serious film. And he does Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah.
I would say probably the third lead on that movie. And he feels like the second lead of the film.
I would say he feels, I guess like
if not the lead.
Standout. Like he is the thing that I feel like I remember from it. People talk about like from that movie.
Right. And so he takes that movie, he gets away from the kind of brooding, mysterious, up to no good, sad boy man, and fully adopts this kind of like Paul Newman, George Clooney, Brad Pitt charisma.
Yeah.
And turns into literally Patrick Swayze in that film and is hot. You know what I mean? Like a level of hot we had not seen him yet at that point of his career. And even though he was really compelling in moments with Rachel McAdams in The Notebook, he was still cast in that movie because he was unconventionally attractive. And the producers of The Notebook were like, we wanted an ugly, attractive guy.
Oh my God.
And they said Ryan Gosling was the most ugly, attractive guy.
Interesting.
And I was like, wow, that's tough for the rest of us. And so I think, you know, where every movie after Crazy Stupid Love, you kind of have this Ryan Gosling meta experience. It's almost like you're watching him in movies after Crazy Stupid Love, thinking that he knows that you know that he knows how alluring he is and like how compelling he is and how hot he is. And so he kind of calls his shot in that movie that doesn't totally work, though that is a very important film for our generation.
Yeah.
Especially because like the Emma Stone of it all, the surprise at the end, their big reveal with Julianne Moore and Kevin Bacon.
Yeah,
an incredible
it's a
last
really,
10 minutes.
Really fun, like crossover movie. Yeah, exactly. I think it feels like like that. And also like the, especially Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, kind of like seeing them as the Hollywood couple, right? In movies, not yeah. outside of the movies, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like being cast.
That was Andrew Garfield. Let's not.
Yeah. That was that era. But yeah, I think also a lot of that, we hadn't seen, like you said, like this hot Gosling yet. And this was where he was, I didn't know he would have, like, if you told me at this moment when Crazy Stupid Love came out that he was going to kind of go more into the comedy route, like mm-hmm. the side of that character that is knowing and kind yeah. of like making fun of that, I wouldn't have totally called that, right? Yeah. Because in that moment, he was like this, like, playing the kind of like hot Brad Pitt, like you said, like a George Clooney,
sure,
suave, right? And yeah. a lot of that was from the Steve Carell character and the Emma Stone character being like, it's impossible that you're so hot. Like they literally had dialogue saying that. So it is really interesting where he kind of goes from roles with this after this.
That's the movie where Emma Stone looks at him with his shirt off and is just like, put your shirt back on, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even look at you. Yeah, that's incredible stuff. And so again, he, even though
he's, do the dirty dancing lift, like you said, the Patrick Swayze. Yeah.
Phenomenal. And so like you said, he's very knowing. And so again, just like how he took a career shift and a hiatus, he kind of does that again after Crazy Stupid Love, because I think of the reaction to the movie and he goes somewhere darker. He goes into the world of Drive, Place Beyond the Pines, Only God Forgives, and Gangster Squad, where in all of those movies, you know, to different degrees, I guess, he plays this stone-faced but weirdly still expressive, empathetic outcast, like a James Dean, like a Steve McQueen, like a Marlon Brando, maybe the type of actor that he came to Hollywood to be in the first place, where he's playing with these kind of extremes of emotions, right? Extremes of violence, extremes of stillness, and plays characters who are very obviously torn up from the inside and maybe are even self-hating. And I think he basically perfects the repressed hyper-masculine man, right? And it almost seems like when he got to Blade Runner 2049 and he got to First Man, he wanted to make it very clear what he was doing in that part of his career, which was he was trying to actively deconstruct the facade of being torn up from the inside, instead of maybe dog whistling to Men's Rights Matter activists, which is what those films can sometimes feel like, those early movies. And so I almost think that Blade Runner 2049 and First Man become this correction of his career, and they almost help give a new life to those earlier movies. And Drive is like genuinely like a good movie. Place Beyond the Pines is a great movie. Only God Forgives, not really. And Gangster Squad, like one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that was our first movie we ever saw together.
Yeah.
Tough first.
Unfortunately, I know.
Kind of turned into a comedy though for us.
Also, it's a question that we get often, you know, like what was the first movie you all saw together?
It was Gangster Squad. But it's Emma Stone and Gosling.
I know.
That's
we should
why we
change
went.
It. You know, we should.
Should we change it? Wasn't the next one Great Gatsby? It was like, that was one of those. That was the same year, I think.
Yeah, I think. Well, we definitely saw that year, but
yeah.
I don't know. We won't actually change it, but
no, we think it's of a cooler funny. One. Plus, it's Emma Stone and Gosling. Like, those are two of the best actors of their generation.
I don't really remember anything from that movie.
Unfortunately, I do.
I think you're right. Like, there is that kind of correction to his career.
Yeah, and I think when you now look back at those movies, that you can see how thoughtful he is in those broken men, and how he tries to fill them with moments of humility and deconstructing their constructs. And I think that actually makes those movies smart. Obviously, 2049 is a like sci-fi masterpiece, or at least in our opinion it is. We already did a deep dive on that movie. That was a ton of fun. First Man is arguably Damien Chazelle's best movie and one of the most impressive movies that feels like you're literally being sent into space. And Christopher Nolan said it was one of the best space movies he's ever seen. And what Gosling does in those roles is incredible. I mean, how what he's able to register without speaking is just kind of so singular. There's really nobody else I can think of right now that's doing that at that level, at least for actors playing in that kind of like hyper-masculine archetype.
He is doing something similar just in different like universes in Blade Runner 2049 and First Man. I mean not completely, but there is that like quiet kind of brooding thing that you're talking about, where it's interesting because it's like depending on the setting, what he's doing can change. Like he can also use that like quiet kind of look to make it comedic.
Yeah, and I think that's why he transitions from those very challenging movies of Drive and Place Beyond the Pines to going back to doing that third build thing that he did in Remember the Titans that he did in Crazy Stupid Love, and he comes back as Jared.
Yeah.
In The Big Short.
Well, not as quiet here, but amazing.
But he's doing that, like, that he's bringing that violent energy that he's learned how to harness yeah. and mastered. And he takes that kind of like self, that kind of knowing, hyper-masculine comedic bit about being this like shit-heel, smug, oily asshole stock trader who knows that they're hot, but also knows that they are a bad person. And that kind of Gosling self-awareness and that welcoming of the audience to laugh with the bit of the character that he's doing allows him to become something singular. And he's able to reshape his career again in 2015, going into 2016 after the success of The Big Short. And he decides he doesn't want to be the next Harrison Ford. He doesn't want to be the next George Clooney. He doesn't even want to be the next Brad Pitt. He doubles down on his own sensibilities, finds a levity in his like kind of own ambitions of never being satisfied with his roles. And I think he becomes in 2016, like our next major drama comedy star, and a blend of something like an Adam Sandler from Punch Drunk Love, like an angry comedic star with the charisma and entertaining charm of a Brad Pitt and screen presence of a Clooney. And he gives us The Nice Guys and La La Land in this same year.
Adam Sandler.
And like, Punch Drunk Love.
Maybe Adam Sandler, Punch Drunk Love in like a more artistic space.
I want to respect Adam Sandler because the Adam Sandler's performances in Punch Drunk Love and what he does in Uncut Gems is really incredible. But I meant more so like Gosling feels like a comedian in a dramatic actor, right? And the
like you're aware that it's Ryan Gosling on screen, just like how you're aware that it's Adam Sandler on screen.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean more so that there is an anger that is waiting to explode in Adam Sandler. And that similar energy is in Ryan Gosling, but he's a much more serious actor, right? And Punch Drunk Love is a real, I mean, maybe I'm just a big Punch Drunk Love guy because I can see you're doubting what I'm saying right now, but I love that PTA film. I mean, if listeners haven't seen Punch Drunk Love in a while, I recommend checking it out. Not many actors can do what Adam Sandler is doing in that movie. And I think Ryan Gosling might be the only one who can teeter between being very frustrated, like internally conflicted, and almost looking like they're going to laugh at any second. Like there's not many actors who can pull that off. Yeah. It's a certain amount of crazy that you need to perform as. I'm also thinking of Philip Seymour Hoffman, but he's also, you know, a big PTA guy. So maybe that's why. But those actors kind of have a similar funny anger to them.
Well, there's also, I think, like with a Gosling and an Adam Sandler, like I do think there is a hyper specific unique tone that only they can bring to the screen because of the cultural relationship to them as actors and like what they're doing comedically, but also kind of like making fun of their character and themselves. Like mm-hmm. It's just all very knowing. And so I can see that there, I guess. Have never like thought about that.
Well, it could be the meta-ness that you're talking about too. I guess I didn't think about that aspect. Now what changes his career for the better and makes him like this kind of actor that we know today is that transition to The Nice Guys in La La Land, mm-hmm. right? That year of 2016 is such a big deal for him. Like those are two massive movies that become career defining for him as an actor who now knows who he is. He's not an actor that you go, oh, he's doing these actors. He's now an actor that reminds you of other actors, right? That's a very different thing, right? When you watch Austin Butler right now, you're watching him thinking he's doing famous actors. But I'm mm-hmm. sure if Austin Butler keeps it up and he does go in that more kind of like Ryan Gosling lane, which he could because he is a pretty funny guy, you could see someone like that. I'm only using him as an example, as someone who becomes his own kind of person, right? His own kind of actor or star. And Gosling captures that in 2016. And if you zoom out between 2016 and 2018, he does The Nice Guys, La La Land, Blade Runner 2049, and First Man all in 2 years.
Yeah, that's wild.
And those four movies are arguably like top six, top seven performances from him. And that is really rare that an actor who's been working since he was a kid to teenager years that has his best performances all within like 2 years of each other. Mm-hmm. I can't even name another actor who's done that. And he perfected the ability to take on like really dynamic characters who can do what I was saying, which I was trying to explain with Adam Sandler, which is this kind of shift between being internally destroyed and then externally volatile in like really human ways. And that somehow doesn't feel like artifice with Gosling. And he still feels charming, even if he is a little bit self-obsessed in the characters that he chooses, or at least the characters that he chooses are self-obsessed. And he's kind of perfected that like hot, but self-deprecating and funny, but embarrassing and endearing, but pathetic quality. And he plays in these kind of like contrasting emotions so frequently, but so well, that it's these years that make him a special actor. So I think it's, you know, zooming out on his whole career, I think it's so cool how he's reinvented himself so many times. And now he's doing it again to a questionable degree, I think, in the 2020s. Obviously, Barbie's a big hit.
Yeah.
But it does feel like he's doing this kind of like Keanu Reeves, Ryan Reynolds, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Cruise lane in the 2020s, which is that he did the Russo brothers, The Gray Man, which is a movie that we had a lot of time for. We thought it was fun. Chris Evans, what he's up to in that.
Yeah, we know unpopular opinion. People did not like, I loved Chris Evans and that. I just loved seeing him. It was also coming off of like a Captain America, you know, era. It was just, I was like, this is fun. I've treated it the same way that people are kind of treating Fall Guy.
I mean, we watched it on Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe if we watched it in the theater and paid, you know, a good amount of money for it, we'd be a little pissed. But we did watch it on Netflix, and it certainly feels like a streaming movie. It feels like very CGI'd all over. But when there are moments of Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling in a room, I'm in, you know? And then obviously, like we said, Barbie, you know, that's a continuation of his self-aware self-deconstructions of man to the most absurd, most fun, bizarre degree. And now with The Fall Guy, it feels like he's playing off the highs of The Nice Guys. Like, it feels like he's trying to get back to March, that character that he had in The Nice Guys. And it certainly feels like in this moment he's in that he's getting money, right? He's doing paycheck films and movies that are still playful, witty. And he's talked recently, just an interview on GQ, I think, about how he's got like a really young family right now and he's trying to not do the dark, broody stuff. Maybe he'll go back to that eventually. And it looks like in his career and what he's got coming up that he's going to reinvent himself again in the next few years, because there's an Ocean's 11 reboot coming out.
I know.
Or prequel, I guess.
I'm so excited.
Where he's rumored to be starring as Danny Ocean's father with Margot Robbie playing his mother.
Amazing.
Meaning George Clooney's mom and dad is Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I love how it's like Barbie and Ken, you know.
That's true. Yeah. And so that's really smart, you know, I guess just financing and marketing. It'll be really smart marketing. And that's supposed to be like a Hitchcockian crime heist trilogy in the comical vibe of the Soderbergh trilogy that we adore. Like, those are some of our favorite movies of all time. Ryan Gosling, this is one of our great actors, one of the most singular entertainers we've ever had in Hollywood. And I think he proved that again at the Oscars at 43 years old, him just dancing around, showing everybody watching at home. Like, this is like what these actors are really good at, which is entertaining first and foremost. And it's not by accident that Ryan Gosling and Robert Downey Jr. were the most like entertaining people on the Hollywood press run during the Oscars.
That's so true.
And that they also both are the muses of Shane Black, the director of The Nice Guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3. Like, Shane Black loves these guys because how much they can play with being thrilling and how much they can play off a joke and be the butt of a joke at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's just really impressive. So
They both have amazing timing. Like,
they're amazing timing. That's a great point. Yeah. And they're also very evocative of different eras. Like, I think of different eras when I see their faces. So they both feel like timeless actors. And it might be because they're so physically expressive. Like, they feel like they could have been in silent films, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, after talking about the Oceans movies and like having Ryan Gosling starring in the upcoming movies, I'm just thinking about like a Brad Pitt, you know, George Clooney and Matt Damon, because he has qualities of this kind of like every man, Matt Damon roles that he that usually gets cast in, but also has like the how people treat Brad Pitt in terms of like this celebrity.
Yeah.
But also has like the quiet nature of a George Clooney performance. And that's really interesting. But I never really thought about a Robert Downey Jr., which I do think he has a lot in common with, is just maybe doing it a little bit more quiet than we normally see like in a Robert Downey Jr., because he's just like so charismatic, he can't like help himself. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just interesting. Like, I never really thought about until we've really done this episode about like, what is it about Ryan Gosling specifically that he is someone who's so like beloved by our culture, but we don't like distance like a Leo or something, you know?
Yeah.
He is like, or even embraced. Christian Bale. Yeah.
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 I was trying to think, what is the comp for somebody a little bit younger than him? The only person I can think of is my favorite actor, which is Robert Pattinson. Robert Pattinson can go and do the king and play and do an accent in a bit. And then you walk out of that movie being like, Timothy Chalamet was in that film? Really? All I saw was Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, but I don't think most people would agree with that. Like, I know that Robert Pattinson can do those like quiet, funny things. I think it feels different than a Ryan Gosling. Or did I just say Robert Pattinson?
You said Robert Pattinson. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But I feel like Robert Pattinson to me does something different, but I understand like the connection that you're saying. Like, mm-hmm. they're able to do something that feels effortless. And
maybe that's it.
Yeah. There's but I don't know if he is on the same trajectory as like a Ryan Gosling. But I can understand you saying like that's a younger
actor. I'd like
that
him
reminds
to go in
you
that
of the talent
direction after the Batman. Because I think the Batman's going to take a lot of years out of him. Because we're not supposed to get that till like 2026.
Yeah.
That means we're going to get a decade of three movies, which I'm excited for. Matt Reeves, take your time.
I can't believe that Robert Pattinson is the Batman.
I know. And
it's so wild.
And it's arguably
like
the best Batman movie. It's insane. It's so cool. And he's sick in Tenet. Tenet, a movie that I don't even really like. But he's awesome in it. Him and John David Washington. That's some buddy cop energy right there.
Yeah.
So I think with the nice guys, this is a special buddy cop, hilarious noir, and arguably like a 4.5-5-star comedy. But it's also important because it opens up Gosling's career that gives us so many other special movies in different genres. Even if the box office and critics alike in 2016 were like, The Nice Guys, is it good? It's not by accident that it's become this like cult classic in 10 years. And I don't think we would have Barbie and we wouldn't have, you know, even First Man if it wasn't for the success of something like what Gosling is doing in The Nice Guys. Because this movie, Russell Crowe is good, if not great in moments, but it would not work without what Gosling's doing. The screenplay is good too, but there's only a handful of actors who could have really performed March at this level. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to talk about this movie.
Me too.
I'm hoping we get a sequel one day. The Nicer Guys.
Yeah.
The Nice Guys More Nice. The Nicer Guys, A Nicer Drift. I'm trying to do a Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
The Nice Guys, Tokyo. No.
I don't know what it would be. I like how in his filmography, he has so many guys and men. Like, he has the Nice Guys, First Man, The Gray Man, Fall Guy.
Wait a second. How many are there?
Lots of guys, lots of men. I mean, there's two guys and just two men. But still, I feel like it's a lot.
Just dudes being dudes. That's what he's good at. Yeah. All right. So, as always, our Patreon episodes are deep dives, but they are also live commentaries. So we will be discussing The Nice Guys while watching it. If you're on the main feed and you're listening to this for our reaction to The Fall Guy and our Ryan Gosling project discussion that we just had, we're about to have another 2 hours plus discussion of Ryan Gosling's career, but through the movie of The Nice Guys.
And so we'll rank his movies.
And we'll rank his films. Right. I'm going to give my top five for sure.
Me too.
I know you don't like being put on the spot, but you're going to do
it.
No,
I came prepared.
Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Let's do it then. So if you go into the description, if you want to listen to the rest of this episode, you can find our Patreon, The Extra Credits Plus, where you can join us on Living Plus to get access to our full 3 to 4 hour deep dives we publish on there, as well as the 3 new episodes we cover each new month. We currently have a catalog ranging from Goodfellas, Alien, Silence of the Lambs, Phantom Thread, Dune, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, a lot of classics. And on top of those episodes, you'll receive access to monthly newsletters to keep up with what we're watching. You'll also find some interesting listener comments in each episode and their discussions and those comments. And then where our listeners, sometimes let us know what they think deserved extra credit about what movie, which, by the way, our vote just ended. And it looks like we're going to be doing Planet of the Apes on Patreon.
Yeah.
So we're going to do Dawn. Dawn.
I would get confused about
the second and third one, the Matt Reeves Planet of the Apes on Patreon. We're also going to do Mad Max Fury Road on Patreon. And then we're going to do the Before trilogy on Patreon, which that's a lot of episodes, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'm excited.
Yeah.
Because we love the apes, love Caesar, love Caesar's friends too. And I'm forgetting their names and I already regret forgetting their
Maurice
names. Maurice, thank you. Shout out Maurice. And, well, Koba, it's complicated.
It is complicated.
And then Mad Max is going to be a ton of fun. It's a bizarre, dystopian, fun movie to me.
I haven't seen it in so long. I saw it once. So
I just threw it on the other night and I was like, this is actually really good. Because I didn't really have a lot of feelings back when it came out. But now I'm like, I'm feeling things. And then the Before trilogy, we've never seen Before Midnight. We've held off on it. We've seen the first two, obviously, masterpieces. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to watch Before Midnight on the commentary. So those will be our episodes for May. Okay, for listeners who want to listen and watch along with us, you can stream The Nice Guys on VOD or you can buy the Blu-ray. We own the Blu-ray. We recommend that. All right, on play. We'll start the movie. 3, 2, 1, play. Okay, The Nice Guys, written and directed by Shane Black.
Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, thank you for listening so far, and hopefully you are enjoying the episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far...
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes, and for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon-exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.
Dear doctor, just tell him you have a spiral fracture of the left radius.
No! No!
Deep breath.
Yeah!
You mind if I have an apple?